I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about love and compassion. I think that also you probably have some things to say about it, because quite a few people talked about compassion. Love is the natural expression of an awakened mind. When we are awake, we're seeing the interconnection. The interconnection of all of life. So normally, in our kind of normal, deluded states of mind, we somehow see that, you know, there's an I, there's a self, and everything else is the environment. So the other people, we kind of, there's the subject and the object is everything else, objects. And as we wake up more and more, and, you know, it's a gradual process, we more and more see how interconnected we are, how life flows through us, amongst us, out from us, and connects with others, and that the whole construct of self and other, or subject-object, begins to break down, become very, not disappear, because we always have that relative understanding of, well, this is the body mind that, you know, I'm living in, and I see through these eyes, and I eat with this mouth, and so on, and I'm living my life out of my experiences. But more and more we see how really we're so connected, and so many of our experiences are universal. They may have different flavors, they may be perceived in different ways. We talked about the universality of loss this morning. And at our core, at our base, this simple capacity to be aware, to know, to have the clarity of knowing our experience as we experience it. Is that something that's personal? Yes, we perceive things in personal ways, like you might like somebody's hat and I might not like somebody's hat. But that's perception. But the simple awareness at the base of that, that which knows the perception, that which can be aware of the perception, there's no color or language or gender or any qualifying characteristic to that. It's simply clear, open, and present. And it's always been there. And it's universal. It's at the base of all of us. So in so many ways, we are not separate, and we can feel more and more this profound level of interconnection in our lives. we will notice that that which drives us to feel separate are also the same sources of suffering. So that which drives us to feel separate, like greed and anger and envy and aggression and judgment, all of these things also drive us to feel separate. And so more and more we can recognize how this creates suffering for ourselves and have compassion for ourselves in this. And this is so much a part of our meditation practice, seeing this. And then as we deepen in compassion for that, we really deepen in compassion for others. I think there's a way, somebody mentioned about having more capacity to have compassion for others than for oneself. And a lot of people say that. And it's true that we may be moved by the suffering of others, and at the same time we're holding so much judgment and expectation about ourselves, perfectionism perhaps, that we don't have that space for compassion. But as we open, as we become less harsh with ourselves, and you know, I loved what somebody said earlier about, you know, asking herself, you know, who is this self I'm, you know, what is this self that I'm trying to defend, you know, or what is this self that I think needs to fulfill all these expectations? That's also a great way of turning down the harshness, turning down the intensity of self-judgment and expectations, just to say, what is this I'm trying to build? You know, what is this I'm trying to create? And when we look inside, we can't really find anything that we could say, well, this is the self. It's just knowing and feeling and tasting and touching and thinking. There are all these processes, but you know, there's nothing solid that we can find underneath it. So when we see this, this harshness that we may have, or all the things that drive us and create suffering, we can awaken compassion. We can recognize. I mean, first of all, even before the compassion awakens, we can say, wow, this is really a lot of suffering. This is a lot of suffering that's happening. When I first started practice, I knew I had a lot of fear. I knew there was a lot of fear. I was actually in a kind of a post-traumatic state. I was about 22. But I didn't know that. There's a lot of fear. But if somebody had said, are you suffering? I wouldn't have said, yes, I'm suffering. Well, I have a lot of fear. But then when we recognize the nature of suffering, compassion awakens for ourselves. And then I think we can have so much more compassion for others, because we can truly empathize. Empathy is a doorway to compassion. We can say, well, I imagine, you know, I can imagine what that person, we never know, of course, for sure, what somebody's feeling, but we say, maybe I can imagine, you know, how that person is feeling, and compassion arises because we have awakened it for ourselves. So it's so interesting that those forces, those energies, such as greed and anger and judgment and envy, which separate us, you know, which kind of reinforce that sense of, you know, I'm separate and I need this and I, you know, I'm kind of competing with everybody else for the limited amount of happiness that there is in the world. That's a delusion that we have, that the amount of happiness in the world is limited, and if somebody has more, then we must have less. So that changes, and that which separated us can become the bridge for compassion and connection in our lives. Does that make sense? Like when we open to compassion toward those energies that create suffering, it can create the bridge to connect. Here's a beautiful little poem by Hafiz, a 14th century Persian poet. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you do not do this out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye, that is always saying with that sweet moon language what every other ear in this world is dying to hear? So compassion softens the boundaries of self. And when we cultivate compassion for others, we face the judgment that we're holding, right? Because it's that judgment is right there. It's an idea. Now, what is judgment? What's judgment of ourselves? What's judgment of others? You know, when we judge ourselves, we're looking at ourselves like an object. We're disconnecting from our heart. We're disconnecting from our inner presence. We're looking at ourselves as an object, and we're giving ourselves the thumbs down. And it's the same with others. When we look at others with judgment, we're objectifying them. We're not seeing that they too are changing, multifaceted, nuanced, evolving, flowing beings, just as we are. And we're fixing them. We're fixing them in time and space as a certain way and judging them. So we face the judgments that we hold. And there's a beautiful practice in the Tibetan tradition called exchanging self and other, in which we can, you know, just imagine. We acknowledge our judgments and our opinions and our beliefs that we have about that person, and then in a way kind of imagine ourselves into their lives. You know, and it's always, of course, we never know, can never know, but we can kind of enter into a sense of their subjectivity and open to that. And it helps to melt the objectification and the judgment. There's a story that Thich Nhat Hanh told about a man he knew who had a lot of anger and judgment against his father. And his father had been very strict with him, very formal and distant, and very little display of affection, and very kind of demanding that he fulfill certain standards and requirements of behavior and so on. And he felt very wounded by that as an adult. As his father died, and he was going through his father's possessions and found a picture of his father as a child. And he was with his father, and so his grandfather. And he saw in his father's face and in his grandfather's face the same dynamics. The very strict, stony, demanding, unbending kind of relationship. And the son, he could finally empathize with his father when he saw him as a child and recognized that he had experienced much of the same that he had imposed upon him. And it was like his heart broke open. He could feel compassion for his father for the first time and forgive him and accept him. And so that connection, that he saw about how this was passed on through generations, this suffering, and how he had created this sense of self around his father, that his father was this certain kind of person, and his father was this, this solid thing, which was just like that. And Thich Nhat Hanh used that as a story to shine a light on the reality that what we think of as a self is made up of non-self elements. So the elements of course, in our bodies. Is there? Do you want to see if, I don't know, maybe it's just somebody.
It looked like it's the security guard.
Oh, it was the security guard? Like okay, that's fine. Maybe his, when we think of the body, of course, the body, one of the Buddhist practices in contemplating the body is to recognize that the body is made up of water and heat and air and then breaking it down into different kinds of elements, and using our current contemporary science, we can break it up into molecules and different kinds of chemical elements. And then also there are the elements of our conditioning, of excessive discipline or love or abundance or poverty or health, good health or bad health. So all of these elements. And there are countless elements that combine in our lives, in our evolving lives, to make up who we are and how we manifest. And so when we can see that, it all opens us up to compassion, because we recognize that all of these conditions, you know, come into our lives and form us, form who we are, form how we respond. And so really, the way I think of compassion is that essentially, when we open our hearts in this way, we experience love, that loving awareness, that interconnection, that recognition that we're not, you know, separate from each other. And that when we recognize that there's pain in the one we love, our heart opens in compassion. So compassion is love in the face of pain, and a commitment to not turn away, to not say, I don't want to open to this pain. I don't want to be present with this pain. It makes me uncomfortable to be aware of this pain, so I'm going to turn away. So compassion is saying, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay present. I'm going to stay open. And I'm going to not that I can fix, you know, the pain, but that I care about it. I care about it. And how that care manifests might be, you know, in many, many, many different ways. And I'll just say one more quick thing about compassion. That compassion is balanced with wisdom and equanimity. So the heart that opens in compassion, it's said that it quivers in resonance with the suffering of another. And yet at the same time, we know that we can't fix everybody's pain and suffering. And so there's that sense of wisdom and equanimity, balance, that we can be with the suffering and we can have compassion for the suffering. And at the same time, we don't need to feel that, you know, we always need to jump in and try to save somebody, because it's just not possible. And if you've ever, and I'm sure each one of us has, gone through difficulty, we don't usually want to be saved, actually. We want to find our own resilience, and we really need the compassion of others. We need the compassionate support of others. And at the same time, we know that nobody can fix it for us, right? So anyway, I think that a lot of you talked about compassion as something that was really important to you and brought you here. So either from something I've said or from your own experience, what would you like to say about compassion?
I can say, continuation. Just when you were speaking, I just kind of realized something about what I was saying before. When very difficult parts come up or difficult habits of mind, I think, although I'm pretty good at being with it, I think the I think the being with it is like an obligation, not a compassion of being with it. I think that's a huge difference. I think if you bring compassion to those habits of mind even, it like releases them. I don't think I've done that. I'm sort of being with them, but stoically, like not like you have to be with them because that's what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to be with those unpleasant sensations, and I'm very good at feeling it and being with it, but there hasn't been compassion in that, and that is something that could change it very much, I think.
Right.
So thanks.
That's a great insight. Yeah, thanks.
Now in my life, I'm sharing pain with someone else. We're both experiencing pain, and it makes it very much more loving to have compassion for his pain, the pain he's experiencing, not trying to connect both and see. So it was very enlightening for this. Not putting myself in the way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because sometimes when you share pain with someone, it becomes about you.
Right. Right.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
But to let this there and feel compassion for this very selflessly, we can say.
Right. Right.
It's very helpful.
Yeah, there is a way in which we can just open our heart in with a quality of selfless service, you know, to be there for another. And at the same time, if it does evoke things in you, then I think it's important that we also give space to that, not to deny it. Maybe recognizing that they're not the same thing is helpful. So maybe there's a time, like a way in which you can give space to, if it is kind of touching something tender in you, that also can, you can allow that to have its voice.
Just that sometimes one event can bring pain or suffering, and then people live them differently, so
yeah.
Not obligated to look at it with the same bunch.
Right, right.
It's very open for me, this, instead of seeing this as a big thing. In the
right, room. Right, right. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's very helpful.
If you're a very compassionate person in giving, how do you protect yourself against those that are not? That, you know, because that can, it gets to you, drains you, it eats at you. When they can't reciprocate, you just let it go. I want the protection rules, you know, it exists.
Yeah, so the question, I don't know if everybody heard, everybody here? If you find that a lot of, you feel compassion a lot of the time, and others are not, you know, how do you protect yourself from people who have, I guess, an uncompassionate or judgmental or, a more aggressive reaction to a situation? Or
you can always be forgiving, but at some point you kind of say, like, is it them or is it me? Or like,
yeah. Well, it's a couple of things are coming to mind. I guess one thing is that, yeah, it isn't me, it isn't you in that sense in which You know, we see ourselves as individuals, and sometimes it's important to see ourselves, you know, in distinction. I mean, each one of us has the capacity for any mind state and any reaction, but, you know, it's not what you've cultivated for all kinds of reasons. So those, the anger, the judgment, and so on, that you're finding, you know, you said eats at you. It's not what you cultivated, but it's a capacity that we all have within us. And I think it's just, I mean, my experience, maybe other people have some thoughts about this, but not to take it personally. It's not about me. I don't need to take it personally. If somebody's doing harm to somebody else, you know, speaking harshly to them, then I have a decision about whether I should intervene or not intervene. But their attitudes, you know, I don't need to take them personally. There's a story that the Buddha gave once. It was to this, there was another teacher of the whole other, there were so many, still are in India, all these different spiritual traditions and practices and so on. And so this teacher from a particular tradition came, and he kind of laced into the Buddha, you know, and said, he was very angry with him and accusing and saying he was all wrong and what he was teaching was a lot of rubbish and that kind of thing. It was just really nasty. And so then when he was finished, you know, the Buddha just was silent. He said, "Well, don't you have anything to say?" You know, and the Buddha said, "No. You said what you wanted to say, and I leave it there." He said, "When your students come and bring you offerings, and you for your meal, and you've already had your meal, do you take it or do you leave it?" And he said, "I leave it." He said, "It's like that. You brought it, I'm leaving it."
It is an offering. There's a book, and I don't know if it's actually a textbook. I listened to it on Audible. So it's called The Science of Compassion by Kelly McGonigal. Mm-hmm. And she discusses this and how you can deal when you're feeling an overwhelm of compassion and what that's about, mm-hmm. and give some practices for helping you to work with it. Because I work in helping professionally. Being overwhelmed by compassion is something that happens. So someone told me to listen to her. I need to listen to it again because I can't even remember what she taught me. But she also has lovely compassion meditations. And I listen to them in the car on the way to see my clients to sort of prepare my spirit for the time with them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said just at the end that, you know, we balance compassion with equanimity and wisdom. So, you know, and I think that is really important. That and compassion in the teaching on compassion, it says that we can fall into something that looks like compassion, but it's really not, and it's pity, you know. And it's like, "Oh, you poor thing, you know, I need to save you, and And that can be overwhelming, because how am I going to do that? And I have to do more and more and more and more. So compassion is, needs to be held in balance with wisdom and equanimity, that we know that we're not in control of this person's life, of the situation, that we can hold the being or the whole set of conditions in compassion. We can perhaps respond. I've personally found in the last few weeks when I've been going, I've experienced someone close to me died, and very suddenly and unexpectedly, and people have just emailed me or sent a card, and I'm thinking of you. I'm holding you in compassion, holding you in the light, holding your family, and it does remind us that we're connected. I think just even we don't think it matters. Like we might think, or I don't want to bother them. I don't want to bother them with my feeling, with my expression, my card or my email or my phone call or whatever it is. But I think it reminds those who are suffering that we are held in a web of interconnectedness and love. And so it really is just being there, just saying, I care, I'm holding you in my heart, is a lot, can be a lot. Other thoughts?
I think it's easy for me to say feel compassionate and open your heart, but I find it quite hard to do. I don't think, I don't experience myself as a very compassionate person. And something, how do you do it? I mean, it's one thing, I got two kids, they're close to me emotionally. I think I feel compassionate. But, people I don't know very well. I walked the streets in Montreal, I see a lot of people begging. I don't think I don't feel very compassionate when I pass them. I pass them and then they go on in my mind and I do what I do. So, at the same time, I'm not really sure, maybe English is not my first language, so the word compassion, I'm not really sure I exactly understand like what you're supposed to feel. What does it mean? And maybe I am, and I just misunderstood the word, but I find it so, I don't know, how do you open your heart like that?
Right.
Not very easy.
Yeah. Well, I think it begins by opening our hearts to ourselves. I think we deepen in compassion by opening to our own suffering, first of all. And opening to the suffering of those who are close to you. And compassion is a response to suffering, to pain and suffering. So I think our children are our teachers in that way. I learned, how to love, first of all, from my kids. I learned what is it to love without a self agenda, but just to love this being and want them to thrive, and be happy. And also compassion, to have compassion, and it's not just people who have children, but have their own children. But I think children evoke that in us. So it could be a niece or a nephew, or a a neighbor's child, or you know, some child in your family, that because not everybody has their own children. And then reminding ourselves, you know, that that this human being is not so different from us. So when we can have compassion for ourselves, we can have compassion for people that we feel close to. And then, is this person who's lying on the street, or who you know, you see at the grocery store, or anybody, your neighbor, are they really so different from you? And it's not always that we feel something emotionally. Like compassion doesn't always, it's not always a feeling. And when we do compassion practice, you know, we shouldn't think that, well, if I don't feel like my heart bleeding, you know, with compassion, that I'm not compassionate.
That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean,
bleeding.
Yeah. Well, sometimes compassion can just be a sense of caring, you know. I care about the suffering of this person. Like, it's not, he's not just an object to me. I do care about the suffering. I'm sorry that he's experiencing this misfortune in his life, that he's sleeping on the street, you know. And then, you know, it might be just be like that, you know, and then you're gone, and you're not holding that. You're not, you know, thinking over and over again, you know. But you're not indifferent to it. So it doesn't necessarily have to feel a certain way.
Sometimes it feels, it becomes too like an intellectual practice. I reflect on these things, but it stays like in the mind, and I reflect intellectually on it. And,
you know,
there's
we're
no connection.
It's it keeps, there are so many different approaches. The Buddha said that there are 84,000 kinds of minds. So there are so many different approaches to practice, and some people practice more intellectually, and some people practice more from the heart. And you know, it's interesting that there are a lot of women who are doing the practice, and I think in general, I don't want to totally, you know, make any kind of stark distinction, but. Men do tend to approach practice more with from the realm of ideas and the teachings and the intellect, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a really valid way, and that's a very, very good way to take in the teachings and understand them and work with them. You know, it needs to transform our whole being. So, you know, if we're taking it in emotionally, you know, like if we're taking it in more from the heart, it needs to also transform our thinking. So there's a whole, there's a balancing and a kind of a thorough transformation that we all go in different, there are many different Dharma doors, and so we need to just be with what our own process is. It's our process.
For me, often compassion becomes painful. I feel impuissant.
Disempowered, yeah.
And I cannot feel indifferent, so it has the opposite.
Yeah.
And if I can help, I do, but often I cannot help.
Yeah. So So it's the balance. It's the balance of equanimity and wisdom to bring into your reflection of that, that, you know, that this, you know, if it's a person, that this person has their own life, their own choices, their own experiences, and that you're not in control of what they choose and how they respond. You can only give them your support. If it's a situation like a place of war where there's war, or we can feel compassion, and we know it's not in our control to change that. So it's really trying to bring that balance in, recognizing that it's not in our control. We can, you know, we're limited. And that, you know, when you talk about you feel so disempowered, that's the falling into unbalance, the pity. Like, I've got to fix this, I've got to save it. And that's considered in the practice. So to be, you know, kind of going off track. So the practice would be to notice, oh, I'm feeling lost, I'm feeling like I'm drowning, I'm feeling overwhelmed, you know. So let me be with this feeling of being overwhelmed and recognize what this is and feel it, and then bring in more awareness, bring in, you know, the wisdom of recognizing what our limitations are. Harriet.
I find it's very easy for me to be compassionate about people I like, people I know, situations I can really understand and empathize with. And I find it very hard to be compassionate to people who have been very hurtful to me, unkind, even if I understand where that might come from, their suffering of whatever their suffering might be. And I start to make all kinds of judgments about it. So there's this group that I can be very compassionate with, and then there's this group that it feels so insincere. Even the attempt to be compassionate feels really insincere. And then I want to flip into a more psychological than Buddhist way and go, well, why would I be feeling this way? Where does this come from? What in my childhood or where has made all this happen? And it's like a cycle that I can't stop. There's the this group here and the that group there. And I'm just full of judgment about that group. And I try to stay with it. And I...
So how does that judgment feel?
It feels lousy. I want to be more kind and more loving and more empathetic. And I feel I'm just full of judgment. I don't like the feeling at all, and I don't know what to do with it.
Have compassion for your judgment. So because the judgment is painful. It is painful. It's not that you necessarily, you know, I think you're jumping ahead of yourself. You know, I think that first of all, because you're aspiring to be compassionate, but there's this judgment which feels very kind of solid. It feels that way. And so it's like, oh, there's judgment, and you know, it's painful. It's not only painful because you might aspire to be something. I think judgment is painful in itself, because it's a kind of a rejection. So I would just suggest that you give your attention to the judgment and not what you should be, but what's there. And
just awareness of the judgment, not trying to figure out where it came from.
No, that's right. Where? How do you hold it? And with compassion for yourself. Not analyzing it, but just as an experience, judgment as an experience. What is that? Is it a contraction in the heart? Does it feel wooden? Does it feel hot, cold, or whatever? Right. So forgiveness is a kind of letting go. Forgiveness is a letting go of the anger, and it's a kind of acceptance. Forgiveness, we forgive for ourselves, to let go of the resentment and anger that we're holding. We forgive. And then that might move to something else, but it might not. You know, like if somebody's traumatized us, it might be that we just need to let go of the anger. We're not going to have compassion for them or reconcile with them, you know, necessarily. We could be open to that possibility, but it might not happen. Or maybe they've died. But forgiveness is huge. We could do a whole day on forgiveness. So what I'd like to do now, does anybody have any burning comment that you want to make? Is it a story or a question or? Okay. Yeah, let's move on because thank you, and I will connect with you after. It's a lot of kind of reflection that we've done. I'd like to just take about 15 minutes to walk outside, and just walking, and you don't need to walk in any way with a vipassana or a body awareness, but more a heart awareness. So as you walk outside and you look at the life around you, it could be people, it could be birds or squirrels, to open to the pain and suffering of what it means to be alive, and allow the heart to just make a compassionate connection. So you don't know what, you know, some man or woman or is feeling as they walk by, or any being. But we do know that in life there is loss, in life there is disappointment, in life there is aging, in life there's illness, in life there's death. And so just this being human is a context in which we all experience pain and suffering. And so just even that, you know, thinking of that there's loss, there's disappointment, there's aging and illness and death for everyone, can open the heart. And so just just walking outside and opening to life around you and being aware of that context of that dimension of suffering and opening the heart in response. So let's, if everybody just stays more or less in front, then I'll just ring the bell and in 15 minutes.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.